Maria brought him a sheepskin and put it on the dirt floor of the cave.
There, she said. Keep that under thee until thy shoes are dry.
The sheepskin was fresh dried and not tanned, and as Robert Jordan rested his stocking feet on it, he could feel it crackle like parchment. The fire was smoking, and Pilar called to Maria.
Blow up the fire, worthless one. This is no smokehouse. Blow it thyself, Maria said. I am searching for the bottle that El Sordo left.
It is behind his packs, Pilar told her.
Must you care for him as a sucking child?
No, Maria said, as a man who is cold and wet,
and a man who has just come to his house.
Here it is.
She brought the bottle to where Robert Jordan sat.
It is the bottle of this noon. With this bottle one could make a beautiful lamp. When we have electricity again, what a lamp we can make of this bottle.
She looked at the pinch bottle admiringly.
How do you take this, Roberto?
I thought I was Inglés, Robert Jordan said to her.
I call thee Roberto before the others, she said in a low voice and blushed. How do you want it, Roberto?
Roberto, Pablo said thickly and nodded his head at Robert Jordan. How do you want it, Don Roberto?
Do you want some? Robert Jordan asked him. Pablo shook his head.
I am making myself drunk with wine, he said with dignity.
Go with Bacchus, Robert Jordan said in Spanish.
Who is Bacchus? Pablo asked.
A comrade of thine, Robert Jordan said.
Never have I heard of him, Pablo said heavily. Never in these mountains.
Give a cup to Anselmo, Robert Jordan said to Maria. It is he who is cold.
He was putting on the dry pair of socks, and the whiskey and water in the cup tasted clean and thinly warming. But it does not curl around inside of you the way the absinthe does, he thought. There is nothing like absinthe. Who would imagine that they would have whiskey up here, he thought. But La Granja was the most likely place in Spain to find it when you thought it over. Imagine Sordo getting a bottle for the visiting dynamiter, and then remembering to bring it down and leave it. It wasn't just manners that they had. Manners would have been producing the bottle and having a formal drink. That was what the French would have done, and then they would have saved what was left for another occasion. No, the true thoughtfulness of thinking the visitor would like it, and then bringing it down for him to enjoy when you yourself were engaged in something where there was every reason to think of no one else but yourself and of nothing but the matter in hand? That was Spanish. One kind of Spanish, he thought. Remembering to bring the whiskey was one of the reasons you loved these people. Don't go romanticizing them, he thought. There are as many sorts of Spanish as there are Americans. But still, bringing the whiskey was very handsome. How do you like it? He asked Anselmo. The old man was sitting by the fire with a smile on his face, his big hands holding the cup. He shook his head. No? Robert Jordan asked him.
The child put water in it, Anselmo said.
Exactly as Roberto takes it, Maria said. Art thou something special?
No, Anselmo told her. Nothing special at all, but I like to feel it burn as it goes down.
Give me that, Robert Jordan told the girl, and pour him some of that which burns.
He tipped the contents of the cup into his own and handed it back empty to the girl, who poured carefully into it from the bottle.
Ah,
Anselmo took the cup, put his head back, and let it run down his throat. He looked at Maria standing, holding the bottle, and winked at her, tears coming from both eyes.
That, he said. That.
Then he licked his lips.
That is what kills the worm that haunts us.
Roberto, Maria said, and came over to him, still holding the bottle. Are you ready to eat?
Is it ready?
It is ready when you wish it.
Have the others eaten?
All except you, Anselmo and Fernando.
Let us eat then, he told her. And now?
Afterwards, with Pilar.
Eat now, with us.
No, it would not be well.
Come on and eat. In my country, a man does not eat before his woman.
That is thy country. Here it is better to eat after.
Eat with him, Pablo said, looking up from the table. Eat with him, drink with him, sleep with him, die with him. Follow the customs of his country.
Are you drunk? Robert Jordan said, standing in front of Pablo. The dirty, stubble-faced man looked at him happily.
Yes, Pablo said. Where is thy country, Inglés, where the women eat with the men?
In Estados Unidos, in the state of Montana.
Is it there that the men wear skirts, as do the women?
No, that is Scotland.
But listen, Pablo said. When you wear skirts like that, Inglés...
I don't wear them, Robert Jordan said.
When you are wearing those skirts, Pablo went on, what do you wear under them?
I don't know what the Scotch wear, Robert Jordan said. I've wondered myself.
Not the Escoceses, Pablo said. Who cares about the Escoceses? Who cares about anything with a name as rare as that? Not me, I don't care. You, I say, Inglés, you. What do you wear under your skirts in your country?
Twice I have told you that we do not wear skirts, Robert Jordan said, neither drunk nor in joke.
But under your skirts, Pablo insisted, since it is well known that you wear skirts, even the soldiers. I have seen photographs, and also I have seen them in the circus of Price. What do you wear under your skirts, Inglés?
Los cojones, Robert Jordan said. Anselmo laughed, and so did the others who were listening, all except Fernando. The sound of the word, of the gross word spoken before the women, was offensive to him.
Well, that is normal, Pablo said. But it seems to me that with enough cojones you would not wear skirts.
Don't let him get started again, Inglés,
the flat-faced man with the broken nose who was called Primitivo said.
He is drunk. Tell me, what do they raise in your country?
Cattle and sheep, Robert Jordan said. Much grain also, and beans. And also much beets for sugar. The three were at the table now, and the others sat close by except Pablo, who sat by himself in front of a bowl of the wine. It was the same stew as the night before, and Robert Jordan ate it hungrily.
In your country there are mountains?
With that name, surely there are mountains, Primitivo asked politely to make conversation. He was embarrassed at the drunkenness of Pablo. Many mountains, and very high.
And are there good pastures?
Excellent. High pasture in the summer in forests controlled by the government. Then in the fall the cattle are brought down to the lower ranges.
Is the land there owned by the peasants?
Most land is owned by those who farm it. Originally the land was owned by the state, and by living on it and declaring the intention of improving it, a man could obtain a title to 150 hectares.
Tell me how this is done, Augustine asked. That is an agrarian reform which means something.
Robert Jordan explained the process of homesteading. He had never thought of it before as an agrarian reform.
That is magnificent, Primitivo said. Then you have a communism in your country?
No, that is done under the Republic.
For me, Augustine said, everything can be done under the Republic. I see no need for other form of government. Do you have no big proprietors?
Andres asked.
Many. Then there must be abuses.
Certainly, there are many abuses.
But you will do away with them?
We try to, more and more, but there are many abuses still.
But there are not great estates that must be broken up?
Yes, but there are those who believe that taxes will break them up.
How?
Robert Jordan, wiping out the stew bowl with bread, explained how the income tax and inheritance tax worked. But the big estates remain. Also, there are taxes on the land, he said.
But surely the big proprietors and the rich will make a revolution against such taxes. Such taxes appear to me to be revolutionary. They will revolt against the government when they see that they are threatened, exactly as the fascists have done here, Primitivo said.
It is possible.
Then you will have to fight in your country as we fight here.
Yes, we will have to fight.
But are there not many fascists in your country?
There are many who do not know they are fascists, but will find it out when the time comes.
But you cannot destroy them until they rebel?
No, Robert Jordan said. We cannot destroy them, but we can educate the people so that they will fear fascism and recognize it as it appears and combat it.
Do you know where there are no fascists? Andres asked.
Where?
In the town of Pablo, Andres said and grinned.
You know what was done in that village? Primitivo asked Robert Jordan.
Yes, I have heard the story.
From Pilar?
Yes.
You could not hear all of it from the woman, Pablo said heavily, because she did not see the end of it, because she fell from a chair outside of the window.
You tell him what happened then, Pilar said. Since I know not the story, let you tell it.
Nay, Pablo said, I have never told it.
No, Pilar said, and you will not tell it, and now you wish it had not happened.
No, Pablo said, that is not true. and if all had killed the fascists as I did, we would not have this war. But I would not have had it happen as it happened.
Why do you say that? Primitivo asked him. Are you changing your politics?
No. But it was barbarous, Pablo said. In those days I was very barbarous.
And now you are drunk, Pilar said.
Yes, Pablo said. With your permission.
I liked you better when you were barbarous, the woman said. Of all men, the drunkard is the foulest. The thief, when he is not stealing, is like another. The extortioner does not practice in the home. The murderer, when he is at home, can wash his hands. But the drunkard stinks and vomits in his own bed, and dissolves his organs in alcohol.
You are a woman, and you do not understand, Pablo said equably. I am drunk on wine, and I would be happy except for those people I have killed. All of them fill me with sorrow.
He shook his head lugubriously. Give him some of that which Sordo brought, Pilar said. Give him something to animate him. He is becoming too sad to bear.
If I could restore them to life, I would, Pablo said.
Go and obscenity thyself, Augustine said to him. What sort of place is this?
I would bring them all back to life, Pablo said sadly. Everyone.
Thy mother,
Augustine shouted at him.
Stop talking like this or get out. Those were fascists you killed.
You heard me, Pablo said. I would restore them all to life.
And then you would walk on the water, Pilar said. In my life I have never seen such a man. Up until yesterday you preserved some remnants of manhood, and today there is not enough of you left to make a sick kitten. Yet you are happy in your soddenness.
We should have killed all or none, Pablo nodded his head. All or none.
Listen, Inglés, Augustine said. How did you happen to come to Spain? Pay no attention to Pablo, he's drunk.
I came first 12 years ago to study the country and the language, Robert Jordan said. I teach Spanish in a university.
You look very little like a professor, Primitivo said.
He has no beard, Pablo said. Look at him. He has no beard.
Are you truly a professor?
An instructor.
But you teach?
Yes. But why Spanish? Andres asked. Would it not be easier to teach English since you are English?
He speaks Spanish as we do, Anselmo said. Why should he not teach Spanish?
Yes, but it is in a way presumptuous for a foreigner to teach Spanish, Fernando said. I mean nothing against you, Don Roberto.
He's a false professor, Pablo said, very pleased with himself. He hasn't got a beard.
Surely you know English better, Fernando said. Would it not be better and easier and clearer to teach English?
He doesn't teach it to Spaniards, Pilar started to intervene.
I should hope not, Fernando said.
Let me finish, you mule, Pilar said to him. He teaches Spanish to Americans, North Americans.
Can they not speak Spanish? Fernando asked. South Americans can.
Mule, Pilar said.
He teaches Spanish to North Americans who speak English.
Still and all, I think it would be easier for him to teach English, if that is what he speaks, Fernando said.
Can't you hear he speaks Spanish? Pilar shook her head hopelessly at Robert Jordan.
Yes, but with an accent.
Of where? Robert Jordan asked.
Of Extremadura,
Fernando said primly.
Oh, my mother, Pilar said. What a people!
It is possible, Robert Jordan said. I have come here from there.
As he well knows, Pilar said. You old maid,
she turned to Fernando.
Have you had enough to eat?
I could eat more if there is a sufficient quantity, Fernando told her. And do not think that I wish to say anything against you, Don Roberto.
Milk, Augustine said simply, and milk again. Do we make the revolution in order to say Don Roberto to a comrade?
For me the revolution is so that all will say Don to all, Fernando said. Thus should it be under the Republic.
Milk, Augustine said.
Black milk.
And I still think it would be easier and clearer for Don Roberto to teach English.
Don Roberto has no beard, Pablo said. He is a false professor.
What do you mean I have no beard? Robert Jordan said. What's this? He stroked his chin and his cheeks, where the 3-day growth made a blonde stubble.
Not a beard, Pablo said. He shook his head. That's not a beard.
He was almost jovial now.
He's a false professor.
I obscenity in the milk of all, Augustine said, if it does not seem like a lunatic asylum here.
You should drink, Pablo said to him. To me, everything appears normal, except the lack of beard of Don Roberto.
Maria ran her hand over Robert Jordan's cheek.
He has a beard, she said to Pablo.
You should know,
Pablo said, and Robert Jordan looked at him. I don't think he is so drunk, Robert Jordan thought. No, not so drunk. And I think I had better watch myself. Thou, he said to Pablo, do you think this snow will last?
What do you think?
I asked you.
Ask another, Pablo told him. I am not thy service of information. You have a paper from thy service of information. Ask the woman, she commands.
I ask thee.
Go in obscenity thyself, Pablo told him. Thee and the woman and the girl.
He is drunk, Primitivo said. Pay him no heed, Inglés.
I do not think he is so drunk, Robert Jordan said. Maria was standing behind him, and Robert Jordan saw Pablo watching her over his shoulder. The small eyes, like a boar's, were watching her out of the round, stubble-covered head, and Robert Jordan thought, I have known many killers in this war, and some before, and they were all different. There is no common trait nor feature, nor any such thing as the criminal type. But Pablo is certainly not handsome.
I don't believe you can drink, he said to Pablo, nor that you're drunk.
I am drunk, Pablo said with dignity. To drink is nothing. It is to be drunk that is important. Estoy muy borracho.
I doubt it, Robert Jordan told him. Cowardly, yes. It was so quiet in the cave suddenly that he could hear the hissing noise the wood made burning on the hearth where Pilar cooked. He heard the sheepskin crackle as he rested his weight on his feet. He thought he could almost hear the snow falling outside. He could not, but he could hear the silence where it fell. I'd like to kill him and have it over with, Robert Jordan was thinking. I don't know what he is going to do, but it is nothing good. Day after tomorrow is the bridge, and this man is bad, and he constitutes a danger to the success of the whole enterprise. Come on, let us get it over with. Pablo grinned at him and put one finger up and wiped it across his throat. He shook his head that turned only a little each way on his thick, short neck.
Nay, Inglés, he said, do not provoke me.
He looked at Pilar and said to her,
It is not thus that you get rid of me.
Sin vergüenza,
Robert Jordan said to him, committed now in his own mind to the action.
Cobarde.
It is very possible, Pablo said, but I am not to be provoked. Take something to drink, Inglés, and signal to the woman it was not successful.
Shut thy mouth, Robert Jordan said. I provoke thee for myself.
It is not worth the trouble, Pablo told him. I do not provoke.
Thou art a bicho raro,
Robert Jordan said, not wanting to let it go, not wanting to have it fail for the second time. Knowing as he spoke that this had all been gone through before, having that feeling that he was playing a part from memory of something that he had read or had dreamed, feeling it all moving in a circle.
Very rare, yes, Pablo said. Very rare and very drunk. To your health, Inglés.
He dipped a cup in the wine bowl and held it up.
Salud y cojones.
He's rare all right, Robert Jordan thought, and smart, and very complicated. He could no longer hear the fire for the sound of his own breathing.
Here's to you, Robert Jordan said, and dipped a cup into the wine.
Betrayal wouldn't amount to anything without all these pledges, he thought. Pledge up.
Salud, he said.
Salud and salud again, you salud, he thought. Salud, you salud.
Don Roberto, Pablo said heavily.
Don Pablo, Robert Jordan said.
You're no professor, Pablo said, because you haven't got a beard. And also to do away with me you have to assassinate me? And for this you have not cojones.
He was looking at Robert Jordan with his mouth closed so that his lips made a tight line, like the mouth of a fish, Robert Jordan thought. With that head, it is like one of those porcupine fish that swallow air and swell up after they are caught.
Salud, Pablo, Robert Jordan said, and raised the cup up and drank from it.
I am learning much from thee.
I am teaching the professor, Pablo nodded his head. Come on, Don Roberto. We will be friends.
We are friends already, Robert Jordan said.
But now we will be good friends.
We are good friends already.
I'm going to get out of here, Augustine said. Truly it is said that we must eat a ton of it in this life. But I have 25 pounds of it stuck in each of my ears this minute.
What is the matter, Negro? Pablo said to him. Do you not like to see friendship between Don Roberto and me?
Watch your mouth about calling me Negro.
Augustine went over to him and stood in front of Pablo, holding his hands low.
So you are called, Pablo said.
Not by thee.
Well then, Blanco.
Nor that either.
What are you then, Red?
Yes, Red, Rojo. With the Red Star of the Army and in favor of the Republic. And my name is Augustine.
What a patriotic man, Pablo said. Look, Inglés. What an exemplary patriot.
Augustine hit him hard across the mouth with his left hand, bringing it forward in a slapping, backhand sweep. Pablo sat there. The corners of his mouth were wine-stained and his expression did not change, but Robert Jordan watched his eyes narrow as a cat's pupils closed to vertical slits in a strong light.
Nor this, Pablo said. Do not count on this, woman.
He turned his head toward Pilar.
I am not provoked.
Augustine hit him again. This time he hit him on the mouth with his closed fist. Robert Jordan was holding his pistol in his hand under the table. He had shoved the safety catch off, and he pushed Maria away with his left hand. She moved a little way, and he pushed her hard in the ribs with his left hand again, to make her get really away. She was gone now, and he saw her from the corner of his eye, slipping along the side of the cave toward the fire, and now Robert Jordan watched Pablo's face. The round-headed man sat staring at Augustine from his flat little eyes. The pupils were even smaller now. He licked his lips then, put up an arm and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, looked down and saw the blood on his hand. He ran his tongue over his lips, then spat.
Nor that, he said. I am not a fool. I do not provoke.
Cabron,
Augustine said.
You should know, Pablo said. You know the woman.
Augustine hit him again, hard in the mouth, and Pablo laughed at him, showing the yellow, bad, broken teeth in the reddened line of his mouth.
Leave it alone, Pablo said, and reached with a cup to scoop some wine from the bowl. Nobody here has cojones to kill me, and this of the hands is silly.
Cobarde, Augustine said.
Nor words either, Pablo said,
and made a swishing noise, rinsing the wine in his mouth. He spat on the floor.
I am far past words.
Augustine stood there looking down at him and cursed him, speaking slowly, clearly, bitterly and contemptuously, and cursing as steadily as though he were dumping manure on a field, lifting it with a dung fork out of a wagon.
Nor of those, Pablo said. Leave it, Augustine, and do not hit me more. Thou wilt injure thy hands.
Augustine turned from him and went to the door.
Do not go out, Pablo said. It is snowing outside. Make thyself comfortable in here.
And thou,
Augustine turned from the door and spoke to him, putting all his contempt in the single, tu.
Yes, me, said Pablo. I will be alive when you are dead.
He dipped up another cup of wine and raised it to Robert Jordan.
To the professor, he said, then turned to Pilar. To the Senora Commander, then toasted them all. To all the illusioned ones.
Augustine walked over to him, and striking quickly with the side of his hand, knocked the cup out of his hand.
That is a waste, Pablo said. That is silly.
Augustine said something vile to him.
No, Pablo said, dipping up another cup. I am drunk, seest thou? When I am not drunk, I do not talk. You have never heard me talk much. But an intelligent man is sometimes forced to be drunk to spend his time with fools.
Go an obscenity in the milk of thy cowardice, Pilar said to him. I know too much about thee and thy cowardice.
How the woman talks, Pablo said. I will be going out to see the horses.
Go and befoul them, Augustine said. Is not that one of thy customs?
No, Pablo said and shook his head.
He was taking down his big blanket cape from the wall and looked at Augustine.
"Thou," he said, "and thy violence."
"What do you go to do with the horses?"
Augustine said.
"Look to them," Pablo said.
"Befoul them," Augustine said. "Horse lover."
"I care for them very much," Pablo said. "Even from behind they are handsomer and have more sense than these people." "Divert yourselves," he said, and grinned. "Speak to them of the bridge, Inglés. Explain their duties in the attack. Tell them how to conduct the retreat. Where will you take them, Inglés, after the bridge? Where will you take your patriots? I have thought of it all day while I have been drinking."
"What have you thought?" Augustine asked.
"What have I thought?" Pablo said, and moved his tongue around exploringly inside his lips. "Que te importa, what have I thought?"
"Say it,"
Augustine said to him.
"Much," Pablo said.
He pulled the blanket coat over his head, the roundness of his head protruding now from the dirty yellow folds of the blanket.
"I have thought much."
"What?"
Augustine said.
"What?"
"I have thought you are a group of illusioned people," Pablo said, "led by a woman with her brains between her thighs, and a foreigner who comes to destroy you."
"Get out,"
Pilar shouted at him.
"Get out and fist yourself into the snow. Take your bad milk out of here, you horse-exhausted maricón."
"Thus one talks,"
Augustine said admiringly, but absent-mindedly. He was worried.
"I go," said Pablo, "but I will be back shortly."
He lifted the blanket over the door of the cave and stepped out. Then from the door he called,
"It's still falling, Inglés."
Chapter 17. The only noise in the cave now was the hissing from the hearth where snow was falling through the hole in the roof onto the coals of the fire.
"Pilar,"
Fernando said,
"is there more of the stew?"
"Oh, shut up,"
the woman said. But Maria took Fernando's bowl over to the big pot, set back from the edge of the fire, and ladled into it. She brought it over to the table and set it down, and then patted Fernando on the shoulder as he bent to eat. She stood for a moment beside him, her hand on his shoulder. But Fernando did not look up. He was devoting himself to the stew. Augustine stood beside the fire. The others were seated. Pilar sat at the table opposite Robert Jordan.
"Now, Inglés," she said, "you have seen how he is."
"What will he do?" Robert Jordan asked.
"Anything."
The woman looked down at the table.
"Anything. He is capable of doing anything."
"Where is the automatic rifle?" Robert Jordan asked.
"There in the corner, wrapped in the blanket," Primitivo said. "Do you want it?"
"Later," Robert Jordan said. "I wish to know where it is."
"It is there," Primitivo said. "I brought it in and I have wrapped it in my blanket to keep the action dry. The pans are in that sack."
"He would not do that," Pilar said. "He would not do anything with the máquina."
"I thought you said he would do anything."
"He might," she said, "but he has no practice with the máquina. He could toss in a bomb. That is more his style."
"It is an idiocy and a weakness not to have killed him,"
the gypsy said. He had taken no part in any of the talk all evening.
"Last night, Roberto should have killed him."
"Kill him,"
Pilar said. Her big face was dark and tired-looking.
"I am for it now."
"I was against it,"
Augustine said. He stood in front of the fire, his long arms hanging by his sides, his cheeks, stubble-shadowed below the cheekbones, hollow in the firelight.
"Now I am for it," he said. "He is poisonous now, and he would like to see us all destroyed."
"Let all speak," Pilar said, and her voice was tired. "Thou, Andres?"
"Matarlo,"
the brother with the dark hair growing far down in the point on his forehead said, and nodded his head.
"Eladio?"
"Equally," the other brother said. "To me he seems to constitute a great danger, and he serves for nothing."
"Primitivo?"
"Equally."
"Fernando?"
"Could we not hold him as a prisoner?"
Fernando asked.
"Who would look after a prisoner?"
Primitivo said.
"It would take two men to look after a prisoner, and what would we do with him in the end?"
"We could sell him to the fascists,"
the gypsy said.
"None of that,"
Augustine said.
"None of that filthiness."
"It was only an idea,"
Raphael the gypsy said.
"It seems to me that the faciosos would be happy to have him."
"Leave it alone,"
Augustine said.
"That is filthy."
"No filthier than Pablo,"
the gypsy justified himself.
One filthiness does not justify another, Augustine said. Well, that is all, except for the old man and the Inglés.
They are not in it, Pilar said. He has not been their leader.
One moment, Fernando said. I have not finished.
Go ahead, Pilar said. Talk until he comes back. Talk until he rolls a hand grenade under that blanket and blows this all up, dynamite and all.
I think that you exaggerate, Pilar, Fernando said. I do not think that he has any such conception.
I do not think so either, Augustine said, because that would blow the wine up too, and he will be back in a little while to the wine.
Why not turn him over to El Sordo, and let El Sordo sell him to the fascists, Rafael suggested. You could blind him, and he would be easy to handle.
Shut up, Pilar said. I feel something very justified against thee too when thou talkest.
The fascists would pay nothing for him anyway, Primitivo said. Such things have been tried by others, and they pay nothing. They will shoot thee too.
I believe that blinded, he could be sold for something, Rafael said.
Shut up, Pilar said. Speak of blinding again, and you can go with the other.
But he, Pablo, blinded the Guardia Civil who was wounded,
the gypsy insisted.
You have forgotten that?
Close thy mouth, Pilar said to him.
She was embarrassed before Robert Jordan by this talk of blinding.
I have not been allowed to finish, Fernando interrupted.
Finish, Pilar told him. Go on, finish.
Since it is impractical to hold Pablo as a prisoner, Fernando commenced, and since it is repugnant to offer him...
Finish, Pilar said. For the love of God, finish.
In any class of negotiation, Fernando proceeded calmly, I am agreed that it is perhaps best that he should be eliminated, in order that the operations projected should be ensured of the maximum possibility of success.
Pilar looked at the little man, shook her head, bit her lips, and said nothing.
That is my opinion, Fernando said. I believe we are justified in believing that he constitutes a danger to the Republic.
Mother of God, Pilar said. Even here one man can make a bureaucracy with his mouth.
Both from his own words and his recent actions, Fernando continued. And while he is deserving of gratitude for his actions in the early part of the movement, and up until the most recent time...
Pilar had walked over to the fire. Now she came up to the table.
Fernando, Pilar said quietly, and handed a bowl to him. Take this stew, please, in all formality, and fill thy mouth with it, and talk no more. We are in possession of thy opinion.
But how then...
Primitivo asked, and paused without completing the sentence.
Estoy listo, Robert Jordan said. I am ready to do it. Since you are all decided that it should be done, it is a service that I can do.
What's the matter, he thought. From listening to him, I am beginning to talk like Fernando. That language must be infectious. French, the language of diplomacy. Spanish, the language of bureaucracy.
No, Maria said, no.
This is none of thy business, Pilar said to the girl. Keep thy mouth shut.
I will do it tonight, Robert Jordan said. He saw Pilar looking at him, her fingers on her lips. She was looking toward the door. The blanket fastened across the opening of the cave was lifted, and Pablo put his head in. He grinned at them all, pushed under the blanket, and then turned and fastened it again. He turned around and stood there, then pulled the blanket cape over his head and shook the snow from it.
You are speaking of me? He addressed them all. I am interrupting?
No one answered him, and he hung the cape on a peg in the wall and walked over to the table.
¿Qué tal?
He asked, and picked up his cup which had stood empty on the table and dipped it into the wine bowl.
There is no wine, he said to Maria. Go draw some from the skin.
Maria picked up the bowl and went over to the dusty, heavily distended, black-tarred wineskin that hung neck down from the wall, and unscrewed the plug from one of the legs, enough so that the wine squirted from the edge of the plug into the bowl. Pablo watched her kneeling, holding the bowl up, and watched the light red wine flooding into the bowl so fast that it made a whirling motion as it filled it.
Be careful, he said to her. The wine's below the chest now.
No one said anything.
I drank from the belly button to the chest today, Pablo said. It's a day's work. What's the matter with you all? Have you lost your tongues?
No one said anything at all.
Screw it up, Maria, Pablo said. Don't let it spill.
There'll be plenty of wine, Augustine said.
You'll be able to be drunk.
One has encountered his tongue, Pablo said, and nodded to Augustine. Felicitations. I thought you'd been struck dumb.
By what? Augustine asked.
By my entry.
Thinkest thou that thy entry carries importance?
He's working himself up to it, maybe, Robert Jordan thought. Maybe Augustine is going to do it. He certainly hates him enough. I don't hate him, he thought. No, I don't hate him. He is disgusting, but I do not hate him. Though that blinding business puts him in a special class. Still, this is their war. But he is certainly nothing to have around for the next 2 days. I am going to keep away, out of it, he thought. I made a fool of myself with him once tonight, and I am perfectly willing to liquidate him. But I am not going to fool with him beforehand, and there are not going to be any shooting matches or monkey business in here with that dynamite around either. Pablo thought of that, of course. And did you think of it? He said to himself. No, you did not, and neither did Augustine. You deserve whatever happens to you, he thought. Augustine, he said.
What?
Augustine looked up sullenly and turned his head away from Pablo. I wish to speak to thee, Robert Jordan said.
Later.
Now, Robert Jordan said. Por favor. Robert Jordan had walked to the opening of the cave, and Pablo followed him with his eyes. Augustine, tall and sunken-cheeked, stood up and came over to him. He moved reluctantly and contemptuously. Thou hast forgotten what is in the sacks, Robert Jordan said to him, speaking so low that it could not be heard.
Milk, Augustine said. One becomes accustomed, and one forgets.
I too forgot.
Milk, Augustine said. Leche. What fools we are.
He swung back, loose-jointedly, to the table, and sat down.
Have a drink, Pablo, old boy, he said. How are the horses?
Very good, Pablo said. And it is snowing less.
Do you think it will stop?
Yes, Pablo said. It is thinning now, and there are small, hard pellets. The wind will blow, but the snow is going. The wind has changed.
Do you think it will clear tomorrow? Robert Jordan asked him.
Yes, Pablo said. I believe it will be cold and clear. This wind is shifting.
Look at him, Robert Jordan thought. Now he is friendly. He has shifted, like the wind. He has the face and the body of a pig, and I know he is many times a murderer, and yet he has the sensitivity of a good aneroid. Yes, he thought, and the pig is a very intelligent animal, too. Pablo has hatred for us, or perhaps it is only for our projects, and pushes his hatred with insult to the point where you are ready to do away with him, and when he sees that this point has been reached, he drops it, and starts all new and clean again.
We will have good weather for it, Inglés, Pablo said to Robert Jordan.
We?
Pilar said.
We?
Yes, we. Pablo grinned at her and drank some of the wine. Why not? I thought it over while I was outside. Why should we not agree?
In what? The woman asked.
In what now?
In all, Pablo said to her. In this of the bridge. I am with thee now.
You are with us now? Augustine said to him. After what you have said?
Yes, Pablo told him. With the change of the weather, I am with thee.
Augustine shook his head.
The weather,
he said, and shook his head again.
And after me hitting thee in the face?
Yes, Pablo grinned at him and ran his fingers over his lips. After that, too.
Robert Jordan was watching Pilar. She was looking at Pablo as at some strange animal. On her face, there was still a shadow of the expression the mention of the blinding had put there. She shook her head as though to be rid of that, then tossed it back.
Listen, she said to Pablo.
Yes, woman?
What passes with thee?
Nothing, Pablo said. I have changed my opinion. Nothing more.
You were listening at the door, she told him.
Yes, he said, but I could hear nothing.
You fear that we will kill thee?
No, he told her, and looked at her over the wine cup. I do not fear that. You know that.
Well, what passes with thee? Augustine said. One moment you are drunk and putting your mouth on all of us, and disassociating yourself from the work in hand, and speaking of our death in a dirty manner, and insulting the women, and opposing that which should be done?
I was drunk, Pablo told him.
And now?
I am not drunk, Pablo said. and I have changed my mind.
Let the others trust thee.
I do not, Augustine said. Trust me or not, Pablo said, but there is no one who can take thee to Gredos as I can.
Gredos?
It is the only place to go after this of the bridge.
Robert Jordan, looking at Pilar, raised his hand on the side away from Pablo and tapped his right ear questioningly. The woman nodded, then nodded again. She said something to Maria, and the girl came over to Robert Jordan's side.
She says, of course he heard, Maria said in Robert Jordan's ear.
Then Pablo, Fernando said judiciously, thou art with us now, and in favor of this of the bridge?
Yes, man, Pablo said. He looked Fernando squarely in the eye and nodded.
In truth?
Primitivo asked.
De veras, Pablo told him.
And you think it can be successful? Fernando asked. You now have confidence?
Why not? Pablo said. Haven't you confidence?
Yes, Fernando said, but I always have confidence.
I'm going to get out of here, Augustine said.
It is cold outside, Pablo told him in a friendly tone.
Maybe, Augustine said, but I can't stay any longer in this manicomio.
Do not call this cave an insane asylum, Fernando said.
A manicomio for criminal lunatics, Augustine said. And I'm getting out before I'm crazy, too.
Chapter 18. It is like a merry-go-round, Robert Jordan thought. Not a merry-go-round that travels fast, and with a calliope for music, and the children ride on cows with gilded horns, and there are rings to catch with sticks, and there is the blue gas-flare-lit early dark of the Avenue du Maine, with fried fish sold from the next stall, and a wheel of fortune turning with the leather flaps, slapping against the posts of the numbered compartments, and the packages of lump sugar, piled in pyramids for prizes. No, it is not that kind of merry-go-round. Although the people are waiting, like the men in caps, and the women in knitted sweaters, their heads bare in the gaslight, and their hair shining, who stand in front of the wheel of fortune as it spins. Yes, those are the people. But this is another wheel. This is like a wheel that goes up and around. It has been around twice now. It is a vast wheel, set at an angle, and each time it goes around and then is back to where it starts. One side is higher than the other, and the sweep it makes lifts you back and down to where you started. There are no prizes either, he thought, and no one would choose to ride this wheel. You ride it each time and make the turn with no intention ever to have mounted. There is only one turn. One large, elliptical, rising and falling turn, and you are back where you have started. We are back again now, he thought, and nothing is settled. It was warm in the cave, and the wind had dropped outside. Now he was sitting at the table with his notebook in front of him, figuring all the technical part of the bridge blowing. He drew three sketches, figured his formulas, marked the method of blowing with two drawings as clearly as a kindergarten project, so that Anselmo could complete it, in case anything should happen to himself during the process of the demolition. He finished these sketches and studied them. Maria sat beside him and looked over his shoulder while he worked. He was conscious of Pablo across the table and of the others talking and playing cards, and he smelled the odors of the cave which had changed now from those of the meal and the cooking to the fire smoke and man smell, the tobacco, red wine and brassy, stale body smell, and when Maria, watching him finishing a drawing, put her hand on the table, he picked it up with his left hand and lifted it to his face and smelled the coarse soap and water freshness from her washing of the dishes. He laid her hand down without looking at her and went on working, and he could not see her blush. She let her hand lie there, close to his, but he did not lift it again. Now he had finished the demolition project, and he took a new page of the notebook and commenced to write out the operation orders. He was thinking clearly and well on these, and what he wrote pleased him. He wrote two pages in the notebook, and read them over carefully. I think that is all, he said to himself. It is perfectly clear, and I do not think there are any holes in it. The two posts will be destroyed, and the bridge will be blown according to Goltz's orders, and that is all of my responsibility. All of this business of Pablo is something with which I should never have been saddled, and it will be solved one way or another. There will be Pablo. Or there will be no Pablo. I care nothing about it either way. But I am not going to get on that wheel again. Twice I have been on that wheel, and twice it has gone around and come back to where it started, and I am taking no more rides on it. He shut the notebook and looked up at Maria. Hola, guapa, he said to her. Did you make anything out of all that? No, Roberto, the girl said, and put her hand on his hand that still held the pencil. Have you finished? Yes. Now it is all written out and ordered. What have you been doing, Inglés? Pablo asked from across the table. His eyes were bleary again. Robert Jordan looked at him closely. Stay off that wheel, he said to himself. Don't step on that wheel. I think it is going to start to swing again. Working on the problem of the bridge, he said civilly. How is it? Asked Pablo. Very good, Robert Jordan said. All very good. I have been working on the problem of the retreat, Pablo said, and Robert Jordan looked at his drunken pig eyes and at the wine bowl. The wine bowl was nearly empty. Keep off the wheel, he told himself. He is drinking again, sure, but don't you get on that wheel now. Wasn't Grant supposed to be drunk a good part of the time during the Civil War? Certainly he was. I'll bet Grant would be furious at the comparison if he could see Pablo. Grant was a cigar smoker, too. Well, he would have to see about getting Pablo a cigar. That was what that face really needed to complete it, a half-chewed cigar. Where could he get Pablo a cigar? How does it go? Robert Jordan asked politely. Very well, Pablo said, and nodded his head heavily and judiciously. Muy bien.
You've thought up something? Augustine asked from where they were playing cards.
Yes, Pablo said. Various things.
Where did you find them? In that bowl? Augustine demanded.
Perhaps, Pablo said. Who knows? Maria, fill the bowl, will you please?
In the wineskin itself there should be some fine ideas,
Augustine turned back to the card game.
Why don't you crawl in and look for them inside the skin?
Nay, said Pablo equably. I search for them in the bowl. He is not getting on the wheel either, Robert Jordan thought. It must be revolving by itself. I suppose you cannot ride that wheel too long. That is probably quite a deadly wheel. I'm glad we are off of it. It was making me dizzy there a couple of times. But it is a thing that drunkards and those who are truly mean or cruel ride until they die. It goes around and up, and the swing is never quite the same, and then it comes around, down. Let it swing, he thought. They will not get me onto it again. No, sir, General Grant. I am off that wheel. Pilar was sitting by the fire, her chair turned so that she could see over the shoulders of the two card players who had their backs to her. She was watching the game. Here it is, the shift from deadliness to normal family life that is the strangest, Robert Jordan thought. It is when the damned wheel comes down that it gets you. But I am off that wheel, he thought, and nobody is going to get me onto it again. 2 days ago I never knew that Pilar, Pablo, nor the rest existed, he thought. There was no such thing as Maria in the world. It was certainly a much simpler world. I had instructions from Goltz that were perfectly clear and seemed perfectly possible to carry out, although they presented certain difficulties and involved certain consequences. After we blew the bridge, I expected either to get back to the lines or not get back, and if we got back, I was going to ask for some time in Madrid. No one has any leave in this war, but I am sure I could get 2 or 3 days in Madrid. In Madrid, I wanted to buy some books, to go to the Florida Hotel and get a room and to have a hot bath, he thought. I was going to send Luis, the porter, out for a bottle of absinthe, if he could locate one at the Mantequerias Leonesas or at any of the places off the Gran Via, and I was going to lie in bed and read after the bath and drink a couple of absinthes, and then I was going to call up Gaylord's and see if I could come up there and eat. He did not want to eat at the Gran Via because the food was no good, really, and you had to get there on time or whatever there was of it would be gone. Also, there were too many newspaper men there, he knew, and he did not want to have to keep his mouth shut. He wanted to drink the absinthes and to feel like talking, and then go up to Gaylord's and eat with Karkov, where they had good food and real beer, and find out what was going on in the war. He had not liked Gaylord's, the hotel in Madrid the Russians had taken over, when he first went there, because it seemed too luxurious, and the food was too good for a besieged city, and the talk too cynical for a war. But I corrupted very easily, he thought.
Why should you not have as good food as could be organized when you came back from something like this? And the talk that he had thought of as cynicism when he had first heard it had turned out to be much too true. This will be something to tell at Gaylord's, he thought, when this is over. Yes, when this is over. Could you take Maria to Gaylord's? No, you couldn't. But you could leave her in the hotel, and she could take a hot bath and be there when you came back from Gaylord's. Yes, you could do that. And after you had told Karkov about her, you could bring her later because they would be curious about her and want to see her. Maybe you wouldn't go to Gaylord's at all. You could eat early at the Gran Via and hurry back to the Florida. But you knew you would go to Gaylord's because you wanted to see all that again. You wanted to eat that food again, and you wanted to see all the comfort of it and the luxury of it after this. Then you would come back to the Florida, and there Maria would be. Sure, she would be there after this was over. After this was over. Yes. After this was over. If he did this well, he would rate a meal at Gaylord's. Gaylord's was the place where you met famous peasant and worker Spanish commanders who had sprung to arms from the people at the start of the war, without any previous military training, and found that many of them spoke Russian. That had been the first big disillusion to him a few months back, and he had started to be cynical to himself about it. But when he realized how it happened, it was all right. They were peasants and workers. They had been active in the 1934 revolution and had to flee the country when it failed, and in Russia they had sent them to the military academy and to the Lenin Institute the Comintern maintained, so they would be ready to fight the next time and have the necessary military education to command. The Comintern had educated them there. In a revolution, you could not admit to outsiders who helped you, nor that anyone knew more than he was supposed to know. He had learned that. If a thing was right fundamentally, the lying was not supposed to matter. There was a lot of lying, though. He did not care for the lying at first. He hated it. Then later he had come to like it. It was part of being an insider, but it was a very corrupting business. It was at Gaylord's that you learned that Valentin Gonzalez, called El Campesino, or the Peasant, had never been a peasant, but was an ex-sergeant in the Spanish Foreign Legion who had deserted and fought with Abdel Krim. That was all right, too. Why shouldn't he be? You had to have these peasant leaders quickly in this sort of war, and a real peasant leader might be a little too much like Pablo. You couldn't wait for the real peasant leader to arrive, and he might have too many peasant characteristics when he did. So you had to manufacture one. At that, from what he had seen of Campesino, with his black beard, his thick negroid lips, and his feverish, staring eyes, he thought he might give almost as much trouble as a real peasant leader. The last time he had seen him, he seemed to have gotten to believe his own publicity and think he was a peasant. He was a brave, tough man, no braver in the world. But God, how he talked too much. And when he was excited, he would say anything, no matter what the consequences of his indiscretion. And those consequences had been many already. He was a wonderful brigade commander, though in a situation where it looked as though everything was lost. He never knew when everything was lost, and if it was, he would fight out of it. At Gaylord's, too, you met the simple stonemason, Enrique Lister, from Galicia, who now commanded a division and who talked Russian, too. And you met the cabinet worker, Juan Modesto, from Andalusia, who had just been given an army corps. He never learned his Russian in Puerto de Santa Maria, although he might have if they had a Berlitz school there that the cabinet makers went to. He was the most trusted of the young soldiers by the Russians because he was a true party man. 100%, they said, proud to use the Americanism. He was much more intelligent than Lister or El Campesino. Sure, Gaylord's was the place you needed to complete your education. It was there you learned how it was all really done, instead of how it was supposed to be done. He had only started his education, he thought. He wondered whether he would continue with it long. Gaylord's was good and sound and what he needed. At the start, when he had still believed all the nonsense, it had come as a shock to him. But now he knew enough to accept the necessity for all the deception, and what he learned at Gaylord's only strengthened him in his belief in the things that he did hold to be true. He liked to know how it really was, not how it was supposed to be. There was always lying in a war. But the truth of Lister, Modesto, and El Campesino was much better than the lies and legends. Well, someday they would tell the truth to everyone, and meantime he was glad there was a Gaylord's for his own learning of it. Yes, That was where he would go in Madrid after he had bought the books, and after he had lain in the hot bath and had a couple of drinks and had read a while. But that was before Maria had come into all this, that he had that plan. All right. They would have two rooms, and she could do what she liked while he went up there, and he'd come back from Gaylord's to her. She had waited up in the hills all this time. She could wait a little while at the Hotel Florida. They would have 3 days in Madrid. 3 days could be a long time. He'd take her to see the Marx Brothers at the opera. That had been running for 3 months now, and would certainly be good for 3 months more. She'd like the Marx Brothers at the opera, he thought. She'd like that very much. It was a long way from Gaylord's to this cave, though. No, that was not the long way. The long way was going to be from this cave to Gaylord's. Kashkin had taken him there first, and he had not liked it. Kashkin had said he should meet Karkov, because Karkov wanted to know Americans, and because he was the greatest lover of Lope de Vega in the world, and thought Fuente Ovejuna was the greatest play ever written. Maybe it was at that, but he, Robert Jordan, did not think so. He had liked Karkov, but not the place. Karkov was the most intelligent man he had ever met, wearing black riding boots, gray breeches, and a gray tunic, with tiny hands and feet, puffily fragile of face and body, with a spitting way of talking through his bad teeth. He looked comic when Robert Jordan first saw him. But he had more brains and more inner dignity and outer insolence and humor than any man that he had ever known. Gaylord's itself had seemed indecently luxurious and corrupt, but why shouldn't the representatives of a power that governed a sixth of the world have a few comforts? Well, they had them, and Robert Jordan had at first been repelled by the whole business, and then had accepted it and enjoyed it. Kashkin had made him out to be a hell of a fellow, and Karkov had at first been insultingly polite, and then when Robert Jordan had not played at being a hero, but had told a story that was really funny and obscenely discreditable to himself, Karkov had shifted from the politeness to a relieved rudeness, and then to insolence, and they had become friends. Kashkin had only been tolerated there. There was something wrong with Kashkin, evidently, and he was working it out in Spain. They would not tell him what it was, but maybe they would now that he was dead. Anyway, he and Karkov had become friends, and he had become friends, too, with the incredibly thin, drawn, dark, loving, nervous, deprived, and unbitter woman with a lean, neglected body and dark, gray-streaked hair cut short, who was Karkov's wife, and who served as an interpreter with the tank corps. He was a friend, too, of Karkov's mistress, who had cat eyes, reddish-gold hair, sometimes more red, sometimes more gold, depending on the coiffures, a lazy, sensual body, made to fit well against other bodies, a mouth made to fit other mouths, and a stupid, ambitious, and utterly loyal mind. This mistress loved gossip and enjoyed a periodically controlled promiscuity, which seemed only to amuse Karkov. Karkov was supposed to have another wife somewhere besides the tank corps one, maybe two more, but nobody was very sure about that. Robert Jordan liked both the wife he knew and the mistress. He thought he would probably like the other wife, too, if he knew her, if there was one. Karkov had good taste in women. There were sentries with bayonets downstairs outside the porte cochere at Gaylord's, and tonight it would be the pleasantest and most comfortable place in all of besieged Madrid. He would like to be there tonight, instead of here. Though it was all right here, now they had stopped that wheel, and the snow was stopping, too. He would like to show his Maria to Karkov, but he could not take her there unless he asked first, and he would have to see how he was received after this trip. Goltz would be there after this attack was over, and if he had done well, they would all know it from Goltz. Goltz would make fun of him, too, about Maria, after what he'd said to him about no girls. He reached over to the bowl in front of Pablo and dipped up a cup of wine. "With your permission," he said. Pablo nodded. "He is engaged in his military studies, I imagine," Robert Jordan thought. Not seeking the bubble reputation in the cannon's mouth, but seeking the solution to the problem in yonder bowl. But you know the bastard must be fairly able to have run this band successfully for as long as he did. Looking at Pablo, he wondered what sort of guerrilla leader he would have been in the American Civil War. There were lots of them, he thought, but we know very little about them. Not the Quantrills nor the Mosbys, nor his own grandfather, but the little ones, the bushwhackers.
and about the drinking. Do you suppose Grant really was a drunk? His grandfather always claimed he was, that he was always a little drunk by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that before Vicksburg, sometimes during the siege, he was very drunk for a couple of days.